RunDNA has an extensive range of running and walking footwear. They're trusted by podiatrists and physiotherapists. The RunDNA fitter's advice is second to none. Pop into RunDNA, 20 Manton Street, Hindmarsh, or 391 Fullerton Road, Fullerton. They're open 7 days, plenty of off-street parking. If you walk or run, you need to RunDNA.
It's Wednesday the 6th of August. I'm Wallace Long and welcome to Hooked on Sport. It's been another big week in SA sport, and no bigger than the news that we now share the mic with a marathon runner. And to get the rundown on Hookie's big run, it's welcome to Ben Hook and Sophie Hilditch.
Hey Wallace, hey Hookie. Now Hookie, welcome back. How are you feeling after your first marathon in the sunny coast?
Yeah, Soph, to be honest, I am physically uncomfortable and emotionally a little bit damaged. It was largely disappointing, to be honest. 4:33:03 was my final time. I think we spoke this time last week and discussed, oh, geez, if I had a really good run and everything went right, I'd sneak it under four. So, yeah, I reckon I ran the first 21 at about 2:03, and then the last 21 took 2.5 hours. I completely blew up. My legs cramped. It was pretty miserable. So I just want to make the point, Soph, that I know you're in Queensland over the course of the weekend, and thank you for all of the support that you decided to give me. Get out to the Sunshine Coast and cheer me on. Might have made the difference. Instead, you decided to fly home early on Saturday night and just completely ignore me. So that's how it works, is it?
That's exactly how it works. Look, we had some betting odds between me and Wallace, and I thought, on my side of things, better not show too much support. Don't want you running too quick. But, Ben, I've got to be honest, I reckon finishing your first marathon, that's a win in itself.
Yeah, I did finish, and that is something I'll always be proud of, and it's one of those bucket list things, if you like, Soph, that I can say that I've done. So, yeah, I am proud from that perspective. But, I mean, oh, goodness me, 48 hours on now, and I'm still, legs are tired. I'm terrified at looking at a flight of stairs, quite frankly. But my head is starting to come around the concept of, yeah, could I attempt another one? And if I did, how would I change the way I'd train? And I'd certainly aim to get a lot more kilometres in my legs rather than, I guess, the fast stuff, the intervals, trying to run 400s and 600s and 800s and those sorts of things as part of a program that I reckon probably didn't really suit me. And I would go back to trying to up my kilometres per week rather than worry about the speed. But, you know, you live and learn. You live and learn.
Now, Ben, I'm sure we're going to get some picks up onto the socials of you during the race. We spoke about your food intake and what your plans were last week. How did you go with that?
It's not a bad story. I miscounted how many gels I thought I had in my pocket. So I polished off the last one with about 10 kilometres to go, thinking, I know there's one more there. And I reached in needing one again with about 5 kilometres to go. This is where the cramps were really setting in. I was actually having to walk about 200 metres every kilometre just to try and get the cramps out of my legs. And I thought, right, time for that last gel. All I found in my pocket was my earbuds case. No gels left. So I managed to find like an electrolyte drink the last aid station. Then it was really just avoiding the shame of walking in the last 700-800 metres when there's an enormous crowd either side of the finishing straight there. And I had a lot of people, you get your name on your bib, so there's people calling you out everywhere. And it is quite funny, Wallace. I saw the live stream and filmed the live stream that shows people going over the finish line, and it is the most inelegant thing you have ever seen in your life. I didn't quite fall over, but as I got out of shot, I sort of did this stumble as my legs cramped sort of to the point of spasm, and I was all over the shop. So, yeah, gee, I've never been happier to see a finish line than what I was on Sunday at around about 10:30 or whatever it was. Look, great experience. Loved it. It was great to have my family there as well, and they got out to a few different spots. And Mum took a photo of me at about 6 kilometres, and geez, I looked good. And she took another one at about 33, and I looked absolutely rotten. So it was like it was a real regression over the course of the 42 kilometres, and I've got the photos to prove it.
Does this run in the family, Hookie, like getting into marathons? Like, how many marathons is this for the family household?
Yeah, well, we go up to a nice round 7 now. I've actually got a sister that's done 2 and a nephew that's done 1, but my wife, Sarah's done 6. And I've got to say, I've got a newfound respect for her. I've always thought, 6 marathons, not that tough. And her fastest was 4:15. And I always thought, well, I'll probably blouse that pretty comfortably. But yeah, to be basically 20 minutes behind her best time. Yeah, that's confronting. She's actually beaten me once on the golf course, and that was hard to take. But knowing that I'm 20 minutes away from her best marathon time is probably as big a mental battle as anything I've had to deal with in my life. Nothing worse than being beaten by your wife.
Might explain why the cheers were extra loud coming from Sarah as you were coming down that home stretch.
Yeah, I did notice that as the clock ticked over to 4:16, there was a text message that I timed out when I checked my phone that was Sarah celebrating with all of my family that her record was still intact. So,
you've still got more hole-in-ones though, Hookie.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, I'm leading that race, and poor old Sarah. I've seen her hit the flag a couple of times when we've been playing together. Neither of them ever went in. So, yeah, either that or I kicked them out as they were about to drop into the cup. That's entirely possible as well. So, yes. In fact, while we're talking about hole-in-ones, you've got one, Soph. What about you, Wallace? Have you ever had that experience?
Two.
Five between us, hey?
So I'm losing the race. That's a bit depressing.
Welcome back. And now for Sophie's Star.
Yes, this one was a tough one again this week, guys. We've had quite a few SA athletes giving outstanding performances, but I've actually had to go with Caitlin Bayre. She's debuted as an SANFL field umpire in the Sturt versus South Adelaide game this weekend. She's only the second female umpire at the young age of 23 years old to umpire an SA game. She follows her coach, Eleni T., who first umpired an SANFL game back in 2013. Look, I think it's an outstanding achievement. She's got her mind and heart set to be able to umpire in the AFL. I think she made massive legs in that, and she's really helped pave the way for the young females to come out and umpire. Look, reading a couple of comments after the game, there were complaints from both teams, and I think that looks like she's done a great job in my personal perspective.
That's the old saying, isn't it? If they're criticizing you, you must be doing something right.
100%. And I reckon if both sides are criticizing, the umpire's done an excellent job. Normally it's pretty one-sided.
And now for Ben's best.
Well, pretty easy one for me because we were running the same event, but I've got to hand it to Tara Palm, who is a star distance runner here in South Australia. Kind of lives in the shadow of Jess Trengove and Izzy Bat Doyle, but she is an absolute gun. She turned 40 a week ago. She went up to the Sunshine Coast to do the half marathon. She was the ambassador for the event. She also won the women's section. She ran 1:13 for the half marathon. So if you put that in perspective, that I was running about 6 minute 20Ks, she's running them in 3:30. She is something very, very special. And I guess it probably just reflects, and it may be something that we've talked about on this podcast before, is how disappointing it is that the Adelaide Marathon barely raises a blip on the calendar when you consider the caliber of athletes that we have here, particularly in women's road racing. Jess Trengove, the Commonwealth champion. Jess is a three-time Olympian. Izzy Bat Doyle, a two-time Olympian. And I don't know if they've ever, they would have both run in the Adelaide Marathon in some event or another, but wouldn't it be great if we had an event here that actually reflected the quality of those athletes, including Tara Palm, and that we could actually see them maybe match race at the right part of the year on our own roads? I know it's a bit of a challenging course in Adelaide because the North Adelaide, the north section of Adelaide, is pretty hilly, and that's not necessarily a super popular thing. But I just want to put this in perspective. I'm running the marathon on the Sunshine Coast, and the entire southern direction of the motorway is blocked off so we can run up one lane and back down another. The entire section of the motorway is blocked off. I remember having a look at the Adelaide Marathon in April or May this year. I was driving past it, and on Port Road, they had cones out to block off one lane. And so cars on that busy section of Port Road coming around past the entertainment center there were just screaming past these athletes, probably about 25 or 30 Ks in. And I thought, I'm not convinced we're really doing a good enough job as a city to host an event that I think should be something that's really important for a town like us, and in particular with the athletes we have. So I just want to make the point here. The South Australian Roadrunners Club does a wonderful job. Very small organisation, lots of great volunteers who are doing an excellent job with what's a very, very difficult logistical race. But I think having seen what I've seen at the Sunshine Coast and knowing that towns like Ballarat, Melbourne, Sydney, of course, Gold Coast, do these incredible jobs with marathons. It's just a shame that we're so far off the pace, and I'd love to see South Australia as a Adelaide as a city and South Australia as a community really get behind something like that.
Hookie's got the new ball for this week's Fair or Farce.
Righto, so if we're going to go straight into it. The Adelaide Crows have been listed by the bookies as premiership favourites, but the bookies have it wrong. Fair or Farce?
Oh, this one kind of hurts me, Hookie. I've had to go fair. I think Crows are favourites to be playing in the grand final, but favourites to win the premiership is a difficult thing to say just quite yet. There's a lot of footy to come. They're going to most likely, or looks like they're going to be likely facing Collingwood at the MCG in the grand final if the standings are to stay the same. And, I mean, Collingwood are going to be a hard beat at the MCG. We've played them, obviously, once already this year, and we lost by 10 points. Crows are a young side, and there's something different about finals, the pressure that that brings. And I think, look, it's a tough ask. Do I think it's out of the realm of possibility? Absolutely not. But I don't think we can jump to them being the premiership favourites just yet.
I'm pretty comfortable with it, Soph. I think Farce. I think they are the premiership favourites, and I think they belong there, and I think the bookies have probably got it about right. They're the number one team in the competition. They're on a wonderful winning streak. Collingwood, as you've just mentioned, is the most obvious challenger for that title. They've lost three of their last four and really seem to be in a bit of a funk at the moment. If Adelaide can finish top two, I mean, they've got a huge game against Collingwood in a fortnight, but if Adelaide can finish top two and they get two finals at home, and then have to go to the MCG, which will be for a grand final, which will be the most benign place to play Collingwood at the MCG. If you get them in a preliminary final, that's a really tough ask, because the Collingwood army being there, getting behind their fans, is a really intimidating place to try and win a preliminary final. But if you can do that at home and then face a club like Collingwood, where all the corporates are there and all of the neutral supporters are there for the grand final, I think I give them a huge chance. So, yep, right now, the way they're travelling, the fact that they're going to have potentially a very, very good finals run, and the fact that they're going to maybe get their toughest game at the MCG when they're possibly going to be in the best shape and got the best opportunity to take on an opposition, I think they are the number one ranked team right now, and I'm very excited to see what happens over the next 8 weeks.
Look, Cookie, I don't love rooting for you, but I've never rooted so hard in my life to hope that you were right for this one. I'd be all here for a premiership, but I'm sticking with my fair so far. I'm going to throw it straight back at you. Oscar Piastri is Australia's best sportsman right now. Fair or farce?
Yeah, good question, Soph. Fair. It's tight, though, isn't it? He's 9 points clear after the Hungarian Grand Prix that was Sunday night. Could have been 20 plus, if not for a little minor mistake as he tried to run down Lando Norris in those last couple of laps. I've got to say, I feel like the McLaren team, a British brand with a British driver, seem to be very supportive of Lando over Oscar. And the way they structured that one-stop strategy for Lando, I think, gave him a huge advantage because it was always going to be difficult to pass. But having said that, look, Oscar's right in it. He's only young. He's aiming to be our third ever Formula One world champion. It's a bit of a fickle sport. Max Verstappen might still be the best driver on the grid, but he's clearly in an inferior car with Red Bull right now. So who knows where we're going to be next year, the year after, 10 years down the track. But right now, I think it is very tough to argue that there is anyone ahead of Oscar Piastri. I'll give you three names that I think might be in the conversation. Josh Giddey, playing NBA with the Chicago Bulls, and seems to be on that upward trajectory that he's going to be someone very special in the next 5 years. Patrick Cummins, I always find it hard to go past the Australian Test captain, in particular with how well they've done in the last 5 years. What have they won? 15 of their last 18 test matches, and he's played an integral part of that. And then Jordan Mailata. Now, that's a name that not will be on everyone's list, but he's on everyone's lips, I beg your pardon, but he's the offensive tackle for the Philadelphia Eagles. They won the Super Bowl in February. He's rated the number one offensive tackle in the game. Hard to believe that someone from rugby league has become such a huge influence in the world of American football. But I've probably got Oscar right now just ahead of those three. So there you are, fair. That is Oscar Piastri, the number one sportsman in Australia right now. So I'm going to give you one more. Selling the Super Netball Grand Final, giving the fourth-ranked team, the Melbourne Vixens, home advantage over the first-ranked West Coast Fever, makes a mockery of the spirit of competition. Fair or farce?
I've gone fair, Ben. Look, the Super Netball opted to put a price on the decider ahead of the 2022 season. So that meant Vixens on the Saturday became the third side in 4 years to claim the premiership in their home state after their government pre-purchased the match. Now, the thing interesting about this is the last two premierships to be won is by a home ground advantage with a prepaid match is Fever in 2022 and the Thunderbirds in 2024. But actually, they would have hosted based on their final results regardless. So, look, 2025, it's the first time this has ever happened. They had a record crowd of 1,500 at their home ground, and it went to a 59-58 loss, 1 point. If it had been a whitewash, I'd be saying, look, I don't think it made a difference. But 1 point, I think having your home ground there has made a massive difference. Look, I will say, though, Netball Australia looks like they do need the money and they are in a position, and this is an easy way to be able to get that funding. And they did know that they were going to be playing the final in Victoria well before they got there. So maybe they should have been preparing like that a bit more harder, but it's hard to beat a crowd of 15,000, and that is an enormous advantage for any team.
So I think you've missed the whole point of this. This is an absolute farce. This is the real world. This is how sport works. The AFL Grand Final is always at the MCG because the Victorian government pays for it. The Super Bowl every year in American football is for sale to the town who wants to host it the most. The European Champions League final is for sale. The Cricket World Cup is bid on by the ICC member nations. The Olympic Games are bid on. So if you're going to tell me that a Sydney Olympic gold medalist is making a mockery of the spirit of the sport, I think we need to accept that this is what happens in every line of sport now, and netball is no different. If the netballers want more cash and they're perfectly entitled to play for it, then these are the deals that you absolutely have to do. I'm very, very comfortable with this. And the West Coast Fever, as good as they've been all year, just needed to work out a way of standing up on grand final day. This was at Rod Laver Arena, which actually wasn't the home ground of the Vixens throughout the year. So it was a bit of a neutral venue anyway. Yeah, sure, they had the home fans advantage. This is how international sport is played these days. This is what happens with the big venues and the big events. Deal with it. Toughen up. West Coast Fever, you came second for a reason.
Very fair, Ben. It's a good argument. I'll give you that. But every single year when we get to the AFL, it's always raised that it's Victorian favourites. And I don't know, Hookie. Look, I think there's an argument there.
Look, last year's grand final was Brisbane versus Sydney. It's not impossible for these sides. Yeah, look, I will say that I'm as guilty as anyone of railing against the Victorian bias that goes on in the AFL. But at the same time, there has been plenty of great instances of interstate teams that have gone to the MCG and won on the last day in September. Adelaide may well do it again this year. I'm sure that at some point the Victorians will look out a way of trying to make it even more difficult for the interstate teams. They're trying to rule out these academies and all of that sort of stuff going on. But this is the way international sport works, and you either get on board and deal with it, or if you're just going to sit here and complain, you'll never get anywhere. So I'm very, very comfortable with the fact that the Victorian government bought it and the Vixens won it. Congratulations to them.
Gosh, Hookie, we've had three fair and farces already and we've disagreed on every single one. Let me throw the last one back at you and see what happens. Port should cut their losses and farewell Ken Hinckley at home this weekend. Fair or farce?
No, this is a farce, Sophie. It's been an absolute disaster this year for Port Adelaide, and it's all by their own actions. They plotted this course, as unnecessary as it was, but now they've got to see it out because they've got a future to deal with, right? They've got to work out to what extent does Zach Butters want to stay and be a long-term one-club player at the Port Adelaide Football Club? What does Mitch Georgiades want to do? Does he want to stay and be someone who is the focal point of the Port Adelaide Football Club, or does he want to go home? What about Nasai Wanganeen-Millera? Do they think that they can actually attract this guy, not as just someone who wants to come home, but come home and be at a successful club? This is all what they've got to ask themselves. And I think cutting and running from the plan that they set to themselves, as unnecessary and as inane as it was, I think would actually be another regression in the steps that they've taken backwards this year. So I do think it's a farce. I do think they need to see out Ken Hinckley. If Ken Hinckley does finish as coach before the last game, it should be on a win. And it should be a win at home where they have an opportunity to recognise him for everything that he has done when he took over that football club when they were a dead set basket case, and just allow the fans to say thank you to him for restoring some pride in the Port Adelaide Football Club that wasn't there when he first became coach in 2013.
Ben, you'll be surprised at this. I completely agree, and I'm actually have no more things to add. You just ticked off all my notes in one, so we completely agree on this last one.
What a shock. I know. We finally got there, Soph. We finally found some common ground. Some shared interests.
Finally.
Let's see who's moved up and down in Hookie's Power Rankings.
So here we go with the Power Rankings. Thanks, Wallace. Yeah, just for those of you who are new to this part of the show, every state league or national league team that plays out of South Australia is up for the running in Hookie's Power Rankings. I give a top 10 every week, and it is driven by performance and performance of what you've done most recently. How about this to get us underway? Forestville Basketball Club, the men in the NBL 1 Central, were in third position on the Power Rankings last week. They're out. They lost by 33 points to Central District Lions in what was an incredible second semi-final in the NBL 1 competition. So they are out of my Power Rankings, and they're going to go through a preliminary final this weekend. So when in, I've got Seacliff Hockey Club. The men are right in it. They beat Adelaide 5-0 on the weekend. So this is in the start of the play-in tournament that's really unusual in hockey, and I won't bother with you trying to explain how it works, but basically there's eight teams in the competition and all eight of them made the finals. Wowie. Anyway, Seacliff, number 10. At number 9, Central District, they're back in. They knocked over the Giant Killers. They are the Giant Killers by knocking over Forestville by 33 points in that major semi. We've already been through it. They're through to their first ever grand final. What a story that will be. Their women won it for the first time last year. In position 8, West Adelaide women's team. They were 7-0 winners over Metro United, so they're still 11 points clear of the Adelaide Comets and almost certainly going to win the NPL women's competition. In 7th position, the Adelaide Hockey Club, they defeated Northeast 2-0 in the first of the play-ins, having beaten Northeast 3-0 last weekend. It's confusing. Just look up the Hockey SA website and ask them what's going on, because no one else is all that sure. Old Collegians have gone from 7th to 6th in the Rugby Union SA competition, Division 1. They went to the Barossa. They won by 26 there. 12 and zip now. Old Collegians going very nicely. Brighton Lacrosse Club continue on their merry way, undefeated this year. 15-10 winners over Woodville in the State League women's competition. They were the last year's grand final team. So Brighton are careering towards another grand final yet again. They've won 7 straight flags. Metro Stars are in 4th. They come down from 5th. They had a 2-1 win over Adelaide Comets. They're 13 clear on the NPL men's competition. That's in men's soccer. 3rd position, Contacts. They went from 4th to 3rd, even though they didn't play. They won the second semi-final against Garville the week before. Garville have just beaten Matrix, so it'll be a Contacts-Garville grand final. Bit of a throwback to the two great rivals of the 80s and 90s. Number 2 position is Sturt. They're 15-0 after a pretty comfortable win over South Adelaide. And number 1 still there, the Crows. They hold number 1 spot with that stirring victory over Hawthorn. What a wonderful come-from-behind victory that was. The Crows for the second week running, number 1 on my Power Rankings. Wallace and Soph.
Brilliant stuff, Hookie and Sophie. Great session. And Hookie, great to have you back. Really proud of you for making it through a marathon. So hats off to you. Loving the T-shirt. And we're looking forward to posting up some of your picks from your marathon run on the socials.
I'll send you 2, Wallace. One when I'm looking pretty fresh and one when I'm looking pretty tawdry. And it's not difficult to work out which is which.
I think we need to see the back of that top with the big bold letters that say finisher as well. That's brilliant, Hookie.
I must admit I'd forgotten about this T-shirt, and Sarah did say to me, why don't you put on the finisher T-shirt for the podcast? I thought, yeah, great idea.
She's only got 6 of them as well.
Yeah, she's got metal strewn all over the house. We don't have any wall space left for all of her,
and
all
Hookie,
of her bling.
Hookie, maybe we can get a photograph of your medal as well up.
Yeah, don't worry. I'll wear it every week for the rest of the year on the pod. I should dig the medal out.
You should. Yep, get a photograph. We'll pop it up.
I wore it for about 8 minutes. Do you know what happened? It's a big piece of metal, and I'm walking around with it, and I was so tired, I had to take it off. It was too heavy. It was starting to have an adverse effect on my posture.
Great stuff, guys. Look forward to catching up next week.
Have a great week, guys.
See you, Wallace. See you, Soph.
That's a wrap on another episode of Hooked on Sport. A quick reminder to follow us and leave a review if you enjoy what you hear. Your support helps Hooked on Sport reach more sports-minded people just like you. We appreciate your support and look forward to your company next week on Hooked on Sport.
If you're enjoying this podcast, I'd encourage you to take a listen to Beyond the Club. It's a project I've been working on with Flinders University. Now, I co-host it with Professor Sam Elliott, and we break down all the latest research on how to maximise the experience of junior and club athletes. There's a range of resources, special guests, and cutting-edge info on how you can make your club a safer, happier place for your kids and their club mates. Beyond the Club, wherever you get your podcasts.